Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous Wellington meeting on air. I'm David. I'm an alcoholic and chair of today's meeting.
G'day, David.
Which is brought to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And today's guests are from the Kilburney Monday Night Group. And could we introduce each other here, please?
Hi, I'm Chrissy. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah, Chrissy. Hey, Chrissy.
My name's Tim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tim. Hey, Tim.
My name's Clifton. I'm an alcoholic.
Clifton. Hey, Clifton. Now, we open AA meetings with the Serenity Prayer, and I invite you to join me with this. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now, I'd like to ask Tim, please, to read How It Works,
sure,
which is the big book, pages 58 to 60.
Thanks, Tim. How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They're not at fault, they seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked, we thought we'd find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But if there is one who has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many have exclaimed, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We're not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we've set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we're alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he was sought.
Thanks, Tim. And this is the Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. If you like to contact AA at any time to find out about meetings or information that can help you, just call us on 0800 229 675. That's 0800 229 675. And there's also a website which has all the information you could ever want, including all the dates and times of the meetings that are every day at a meeting near you. That's at aa.org.nz. And also another message from the sponsor, before we get on with the meeting here, is that this coming week, starting tomorrow, is survey week. This is a very, very important activity in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're taking a survey of all members to see how many members we've got and how well they're doing in AA. All the information, it will be collected at electronically off a phone at meetings this week. So we're asking everybody please to attend a meeting one day this week, at least from tomorrow through to Saturday. You know, preferably your home group, but as long as you get into the survey once, it will really help to put AA together for the next few coming years, to see how we can help our members and help new people who aren't being helped yet. Right, that's the message from our sponsor. And now we'll start our meeting sharing. And could I ask? I beg your pardon. Of course, we have to have the daily reflection. My remiss at that. Too many sponsorship messages. We'll ask Chrissy to read the daily reflection for May the 2nd, please.
Thank you. Lighting the dark past. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have. The key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. And that's from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 124. No longer is my past an autobiography. It is a reference book to be taken down, opened and shared. Today, as I report for duty, the most wonderful picture comes through. For though this day be dark, as some days must be, the stars will shine even brighter later. My witness that they do shine will be called for in the very near future. All my past will this day be a part of me because it is the key, not the lock.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Thanks, Chrissy.
And now could we please ask Clifton to share?
Cool. My name's Clifton. I'm alcoholic.
Okay, Clifton.
Hi, Clifton.
Yeah, before I came into the studio, I was outside and I was usually, I don't think of what to say, but I was thinking of what not to say and trying to calm my swear words, so I should be good with that this morning, hopefully. I'm an alcoholic. Of course, I didn't admit that at first, even though as my drinking got on, as the years got on, I kind of realised that, but never ever admitted it. Started off really young drinking, with no force by anybody else or no real pressure from anybody else. Just saw a lot of people drinking as I was going up, and just thought I wanted to do that, but that's sort of what's going to happen. And I'm also start learning to do it young and get good at it young. so. Really, I think I've heard a lot of the people started drinking regularly at 14. I'll just go for 13 because that's just sort of a different odd number. Started tasting alcohol a little bit more regular, taking it from friends and family's houses who I thought they didn't know. Weekends go out with friends. I had friends at school, but they weren't the real friends that I wanted to hang out with. They were kind of they were just sort of there making up space for me. But it was the friends that weren't at school that I'd meet after school in town or other places that were doing what I wanted to get up to, which was drinking and just what I thought was being young at the time, drinking and smoking. But as time got on, like I said, it was fun at first, and it was a laugh and give me a bit more courage and bring me a bit more confidence and more ego, really. And as time got on with drinking, got more regular, got more bit more serious, and I got a bit more bold doing it. I'd miss school to go and drink with friends outside of school, and sometimes just drink on my own until I found friends. That happened all through college. I was a bit of a good high achiever. Went to school, did well at college, at school, I suppose. School C was the one back then. And, got a couple of school certificates just. So it was fun at first. And then I started to do the family thing, getting jobs and drink after work. Started to not be as fun as it started out to be. It started to become a bit of an issue, and it started to become I had to have a drink for certain things, like I had a hard day at work, had a hard night before, to get rid of the shakes, so to speak, the DTs we call them. And then it became a bit of a more regular thing, and become more of an issue in my life. And still there was no signs of it being an alcoholic to me until maybe the mid-30s to early 40s. Mid-30s to early 40s, I realised I have an issue, you know. And I think the last 5 years of my drinking, last 6 years, 5 years, I started to isolate really badly. Just going straight home from work, drinking, thinking about drinking while I was at work. Just having bad attitude at work. Because of the night before, wake up with hangover. I always went to work. I was a bit of a functioning alcoholic, now that I know, since being in AA, being in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous last year, September the 24th, so I'm 7 months and 8 days, or 220 days. Very happy about that. I did stop saying it for a while there, but I was prompted by somebody to say my sobriety date, or say how long I've been, because I've sort of grabbed it by both horns and just run with it. And it is a spiritual program, very spiritual program, and I was kind of happy about that. There's a line in the 12 and 12 book says, there's the guy full of faith but still reeks of alcohol, and that was me. I'd show up everywhere, talk about God this, God that, but I was still drinking. Heavily, actually. But now I like to think of myself as the guy full of faith but doesn't reek of alcohol. Maybe just a lot of chai latte. I go to the Kilburnie Monday night meeting, and I have been every Monday since I've come into the rooms. It's a really fond meeting of mine. What's helped me along the way to step work with my sponsor. So there's a few things suggested when we first come in to AA and to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's get a sponsor, go regular meetings, get a home group, which I have got, and do some service work at that home group. So the home group is an important home group. This is one we shouldn't miss. It keeps us on the path, and you make more friends there. You can make good friends in this fellowship, good meaningful friendships, which I have. We're not a glum lot. We're not sort of, I can't remember the line exactly, but we're not the type that would usually hang out with each other before the rooms, but we really enjoy each other's company. We have one main thing in common: we're all alcoholics in these rooms, and we're here to pass the message on to still suffering alcoholics by simply sharing our experience, strength, and hope for the future, right? So I'm really enjoying Alcoholics Anonymous and what I'm doing in there and what I'm getting out of it. There's some promises in the in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that, if we stick to what we're doing, things like we will intuitively know how to handle situations that would used to baffle us. Well, that's, for me, is definitely one. The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. All good stuff, that a lot of fear that I used to have, fear of being caught out, fear of people knowing, where actually a lot of people already knew. that I was an alcoholic. I just didn't know I didn't admit it myself. Yeah, and so for me, it's just the hope that I can help other people, help other alcoholics out there when they come into the rooms, be friendly and welcoming, and just not lose the faith, because if we do what's suggested and just do a few simple things, but it's a simple program for very not simple people. But yeah, I think I might just leave it there.
So, good on you, Clifton.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks, Clifton. That was really good. And Ka Pai, achieving so much in that many months. It's
thank you.
Tremendous to hear. Look, this is the Alcoholics Anonymous Wellington meeting on air, brought to you on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And I'm David, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm the chair of the meeting today. And just to remind you, if you'd like to contact Alcoholics Anonymous about getting any help or advice or information you might like, or to find out where one of our many meetings are near you, you can call us on the 0800 number, so 0800 229 6757, or the website aa.org.nz. Right, now we're going to ask Chrissy if you could share, please.
Hi, I'm Chrissy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Chrissy. Hey.
Today I am 4,023 days sober. So I'm 11 years sober.
That's a lot of days.
And it's not of my doing. I've shown up, I've done what's been suggested, and I've stayed sober a day at a time for this long. Never in my wildest nightmares did I think that I would get sober and stay sober, and that terrified me. I came into AA in 1998, full of grandiose ideas. I thought the big book was sexist. It was written in 1939. I had to learn how to get over myself. I had to learn how to accept my life and accept what I've done in the past. And that reading that I read, it talked about, the dark past is the key now. I can identify with everyone's sharing. I look for the similarities, not the difference. And I know now that the alcohol is just a symbol, something that I used because I had deep emotional, difficulties or whatever it was. I was born alcoholic. I take responsibility for everything I've done since the age of 18, the stuff that happened to me when I was a child, the things that I saw, horrific stuff that I spent my whole life trying to block out. I wasn't at fault then. I was surrounded by alcoholics, addicts, gamblers, unreliable people. When I was a teenager, my mother had four young kids, and my father was long gone, and she worked at night, and I had to feed the younger kids and get them to bed and, all that kind of stuff. I had a lot of responsibility at a young age, and I had no curfews. She wouldn't know whether I was home or not, and I started to hang out with older people. I was 14. I got drunk and I loved it. I didn't so much like the throwing up every time I drank, but I loved that effect. I hated the taste. I always hated the taste, so I had to scull back really quickly. You know, those first few drinks. I loved the effect. Gave me a different personality. I forgot where I came from. I forgot stuff that had happened. I'd make all these promises. Yeah, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I was such a people pleaser. And I got involved with people, places and things that it was too much for me to cope with. And I was young and I ended up having a breakdown. I ended up in hospital and I was suicidal. And that continued throughout my life. I'd have periods where I didn't get into trouble. And then I started to not be able to do my job, which I loved, which I was good at. I didn't know that I had DTs. I didn't know that I was in blackout most times I drank. I thought I had amnesia, and I just thought I was a nervous wreck when I was really withdrawing from the alcohol. So I'd drink bottles of cough mixture, bottles of rescue remedy, and then I got on to the prescription pills that weren't prescribed for me. Although there was a doctor in the 80s that you could go to with a list of everything you wanted and he'd write a prescription for you. Life was quite different then. When I was 27, I had a business, I had staff, and you would think that everything was going so well. I was making money, I was going on trips overseas, but my drinking increased and I ended up with a perforated stomach ulcer. I lost so much blood, I was in intensive care for a couple of days. The specialist said to me, "You must stop drinking. You must attend AA. You must give up caffeine and nicotine if you want to live." I thought, yeah, whatever. I had a bad attitude. I'd been expelled from school. I'd had bad, violent, horrible relationships. And there was, no one was going to tell me what I must do or must not do. Anyway, I came to AA and it wasn't for me. I had no interest in having a higher power or a God of my understanding. I was too cool to be a sober person. I had no friends that didn't drink. I just wasn't ready. But something stuck in my mind, and that was, all I need is a desire to stop drinking. And I didn't have that, and I really wanted that, because I thought, if I have a desire to stop drinking, maybe I can come in and have a completely different life. I didn't drink tea or coffee for 12 years. I tried drinking beer only. I tried drinking vodka only. And in the end, I drank cheap cask wine at room temperature in a coffee mug. It was lonely. It was really lonely. It was scary. It was horrible. And just the disease progressed. Just got disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. I couldn't eat. I could only drink. I only hung out with people who were in the same state as me. I've drunk meths with other people who were drinking meths. I was drunk already. I don't know what it did or what it didn't do. I got lower and lower and lower until I was in the gutter and I just wanted to be dead. No human power could relieve me of my alcoholism. God could and would if he was sought. I didn't realise that I could choose a God of my own understanding. It wasn't a religious God, but I knew that there was something that happened in these rooms. There was something that happened to me, and it wasn't me doing it. I got a sponsor. I always thought sponsorship was about money. I thought yes, because I loved money. But it was nothing like that. It was someone who had a bit of sobriety up, and it was someone who had walked through the steps with somebody else who was their sponsor, and that they would take me through the steps one at a time, and I would learn what to do and how to do it. So this time I just did it. Just my main focus, and my main focus now, as soon as I wake up, I say thank you for my life. I say please help me to get rid of that bondage of self. You know, it's all about me. Selfishness, self-seeking, instant gratification, all that kind of stuff. This is about ego deflation. I'm just another bozo on the bus now. Everything I say comes from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't made it all up. But it works for me, and it gives me freedom. Freedom. I'll always be an alcoholic, and I don't want to die today. I want to stay sober and be there for somebody else who wants to stay sober, because that's what happened to me. And we have fun, and I learn how to live life on life's terms, which doesn't seem to really be my terms, but it works out just fine. And I'm happy. Thank you.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Thanks, Chrissy. That was a tremendous story, Chrissy. Cool. Imagine how many thousands of days at one day at a time. It's really working the AA plan. Yes. Wow. Right, this is the Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on air on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. I'm David, and I'm an alcoholic and the chairperson of today's meeting. And just a reminder that this coming week, starting tomorrow, is survey week, where we're doing a survey of all AA members to be able to plan for AA's future, to see where we are at the moment, how AA is helping people, and how we can better help the still suffering alcoholic. It's quite important if you could attend a meeting this week. Make a point of trying to get to your own regular meeting, or just any meeting, so that you can take part in the survey any day of the week from tomorrow through to next Saturday. Right, and once again, this is the AA Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous on air, and could I please ask Tim to share?
Sure, my name's Tim, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Tim.
Hey, Tim.
It's good to be here. I am a regular attendee of the Kilburnie Monday night AA meeting, and I have my own seat there. I like, for me, AA, a lot of AA is about consistency. You know, I go there, I sit in the same seat. I like that with that meeting, this fellowship beforehand. You know, we meet at Curry Evan, 6 p.m. every week. Everyone's welcome. I like that's what I do on Mondays, you know. In AA, like the only time I ever really attempt to tell my story is when I'm doing AA on air. Like I generally don't do that. I just share bits of myself. And what I know as the older I grow, the longer I stay sober, how I see it all changes quite dramatically. And so I think, you know, have a go at it, you know. I grew up in an alcoholic home and it was violent, but it wasn't necessarily that bad. And it was the 1970s. I always think every home was violent. It was just normal. Everyone got beaten up. I mean, that's how it was. And it was actually, I think it's a site. I mean, my cousins and I were encouraged to fight. It was considered that's what boys are supposed to do. But we'd harm our faces, so they bought us boxing gloves now rather than say don't fight. And growing by that. But I could see in my family alcoholism and with my uncles. And some of them were successful in advertising, banking and other things. But they were drunks and they were nasty, and you could, and also as you're a kid, you're very highly impressionable, you know, young mind, and you can see how your life can go. You know, if you drink, it's going to go that way, or you know, you get married and move to the Hutt Valley and have three children and get fat. And I remember thinking that was hell, and having an ordinary that horrified me. So I didn't want an ordinary life. I didn't want to be like my uncle. I didn't want to be a drunk. But there was these other people, family members and others who'd come into our lives, and they'd people who'd been overseas, and they were drug-connected people with, as I said, this heroin, and they'd done cocaine in Southern California or smuggled from Afghanistan. They were just incredibly charismatic people. Mm. And you'd look at that as a kid and you'd think, jeepers, or this cousin I had from Christchurch, remember, and come out to the Hawke's Bay and we're going swimming and he'd been stabbed a number of times. He had the scars, and I remember, look at him, what are they? And he goes, so I've been stabbed. And I said, how many times? And he explained, well, there's stabbing. Each time you get stabbed, that's called a stabbing, and you get stabbed more than once, so it's hard to count the amount of times he's been stabbed. And I remember as a child, this impressionable child, thinking, that is so cool. And when I grow up, if I'm bad enough, I maybe one day will be stabbed too. And, and of course, that day came. You know, I didn't. It was my girlfriend at the time. But, yeah, but all that thing about I didn't want to drink. But even as a child, I was planning my drinking. I was thinking, I remember saying, I'm just going to go to the pub on Fridays and I'm going to drink. And Mum got sick of it. I don't want to hear about it. You know, you're 6 years old. You know, you're not. But all my plans about not being alcoholic went out the window when I had my first drink at 12. Like, that thing that makes me alcoholic is there straight away, that physical allergy, the mental ups. I loved that feeling of that first drink. I remember it so vividly, and that wonderful feeling of it. And then just the next few years, the obsession, you know, because essentially the things alcoholics will have in common is the physical allergy, the mental obsession. It means when I have a drink, I want more badly. And if I try and you take away that from me, when I was a child, that happens. You know, you have two drinks and you can't have more. That terrible feeling of wanting more and not being able to have any. And then going to school in Carpety College. And all I'm doing is thinking about drinking at the end of the week. Can we start on Thursday? Can we do this? You know? But drugs are cool, and I did a lot of drugs. And then my life, I mean, I've been all over the place, and that's serious stuff. I was an intravenous drug addict for a long, long time, and I lived in, you know, London, Amsterdam. I've been to Southeast, like, a lot of time in Australia. And that was my life, you know, and it's nature of alcoholism, it gets worse, and it got shittier and harder. But also the therapeutic values of booze and drugs, they weren't really kicking in. Yeah, I didn't feel good anymore. It was actually horrific living like that. But I kept going like this. Most alcoholics, if you listen to them, they'll share their story, and it will be bad at a certain point, and you think, oh, well, then they stop. But no, they went for another 10 years or stuff like that. That you hear that in Bill's story. Like at a certain point, you think, oh, shitty, that's got to be close to when he... No, he kept going, you know. And I did, you know. I got sober again 5 years ago. I'd been relapsing for a number of years. And everyone had sort of given up hope for me. I was the guy, the tragic case, you know, I sort of thought. But I just showed, I kept showing, the biggest, smartest thing I did, I kept coming back. And I got stickability, you know, I went to regular means regular. I got a big book sponsor, that's really important. AA is two things, you know, it's the steps, which is the way of life contained in the first 164 pages of the big book, and the fellowship, which is the people, you know, that they're equally important to me. And then and as I go along, it took a couple of years for my head. The thing is, when I stop drinking and taking drugs, my mind is very, very active, and that active mind, when I get sober, it turns on me, and I become highly neurotic. Being sober without AA will always eventually become absolutely unbearable, and I will have to drink to preserve my sanity or shoot up drugs, either or. Like that's fundamental to me. And so, yeah, I go to regular means regular, and the guy says, AA, it is a spiritual way of life. It's a spiritual program. And each story, you know, in my own language, from my own point of view, how I came to form a relationship with God, you know, which I went through the motions of. In the beginning, there's just this morning meditation, which is, to me, contemplation. I'd just do the same stuff again and again and again. But then that form, that belief I have now has developed over time. Each time I come here, it's different. You know, like I actually absolutely believe in a soul. You know, it's gone when I die, you know, like, but my job is to preserve that soul. So when I leave it, it's in good condition. I do that by being good, which is just kind, honest, generous. Very simple stuff. You know, even I can learn kind, honest, generous in that order. You know, I put kindness ahead of honesty. And each day, like, I just have to be as good as I can be. And another thing is, very rarely am I serious ever. That life I had before, that's serious. You know, that's kicking people's teeth in serious, kicking doors in at 3 a.m. serious. You know, you're always living with that. Someone else can be coming through that door for me. That constant, you know, and being that guy who you've got to, if you disrespect me and all those rules, you know, they don't apply to me now, you know. You can beep your horn at me, shake your fist at me. I'm not getting out of the car to get you anymore. But those days are gone. I've got to be lighthearted. And it is, to a degree, there's a saying somewhere, you know, wear life like a loose garment. Now, I don't get to choose that when I'm stressed out. But as I go along, life gets, it certainly gets easier being around me, I'm told. It's funny though, because the woman who stabbed me, she also threw an electric heater in my bath and smashed me over the head with a candlestick holder. Like, oh, yeah. My wife now says, I can really understand why she did that. I was never a bad guy, but yeah, I was a whole bad guy, but I didn't mean to be. No, I always felt like a bad person. I was just misunderstood. But yeah, I'm a big believer, and there's one problem with me. It's called alcoholism, and all the rest are alcoholism-related disorders, so all the mental health diagnoses I've had, all that stuff, as I've just focused on recovering from alcoholism, all that stuff's cleared up. I'm far less neurotic. All the other stuff has cleared up. That's just me, you know, and you know, I don't go to therapy. I don't take medications. I don't do any of that. All I have is AA. And for me, that's enough. It's always been enough. So I'll finish with this, which I hate people who say that, because they never do finish on this, but... Oh, God, I've forgotten what it was. What a huge anticlimax. Is that 2 fingers as in 2 minutes?
Yes.
What was I going to finish on? Tell me. It's got me. Nah.
Love it.
Yeah, nah.
Tim, you're not often... lost for words.
Nah, that's really, one person did that to me, I'll finish on this, and then she said, no, I won't, and it always left me with this great need, you know, because when they say that, it's like, here we go. It's like when in AA, when someone says, well, I don't have much to share today, and then you think, oh, shit, here we go, 15 minutes of my life down the drain as they don't stop. So, yeah, I wish people would just stop when they've had enough. Actually, I'm going to do that now. Thank you, David. It's been a pleasure being here.
Oh, thank you, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim. That's quite a hoot. It's I'm David. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm the chair for the meeting. It just makes me think. At home, I'm known as Radio David, the walkie-talkie, because I just never stop. And I know the discipline here of you know, only talking to introduce speakers and bring you the sponsors' messages, and to let everybody know that this is the Wellington Access Radio meeting on air, which is on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And Alcoholics Anonymous is available all over New Zealand, all over the world, in most countries. There's thousands of groups around the world with millions of people who are being helped every day. You can go to a meeting, you know, virtually any country you might be travelling to. And I've been to meetings in, you know, quite a few different places myself, and they're just the same as they are here, you know, sort of people like us, you know, drunks, trying to recover one day at a time. And you're very welcome anywhere at any meeting. You can find out where to find a meeting near you, or to
look up more about Alcoholics Anonymous at our website, which is aa.org.nz, and phone us on the free phone 0800 AA Works, which is 0800 229 6757. Now that's, you can ring that number 24 hours a day. It's just there'll be somebody there to actually take your call up until at least 9 o'clock at night, and for a few hours it'll go to a recorded message and somebody will ring you back quite quickly. But the 0800 number is a good way to find help and somebody to talk to near you. Now also, just to remind everybody again the importance of going to an AA meeting this coming week, because AA is doing it's survey week. It's described as an act of service that will strengthen AA for the next person who walks through the door. And it's a survey of how many people are in AA, to how AA has helped you or not, how long people have been sober for. These are all things that will help to plan, grow the fellowship, to help the still suffering alcoholic. And the survey will be taken at each meeting this week. It's only once, so you'll only do it once. It's done on a mobile phone with a QR code. If you don't have one of those, somebody else there will help you with it. And all of the results on it are all quite anonymous. There's no, I'm taking anybody's names or anything like that. It's to get the statistical information, just to see, how many people are being helped by AA in New Zealand. The last time such a survey was done was about 2004, so it's been, quite a long time. And it could be quite an important thing to be helping to plan how else we can help people. Now I'm looking at the clock here, and it's been great having Chrissy, Tim and Clifton here from the Kilburnie Monday night meeting, and talking about their experiences, strength and hope. And we're almost coming up to 11 o'clock, but not quite. The next AA on-air meeting, they're every 4 weeks. They're not monthly, they're every 4 weeks. And so the next one is May the 30th. So there's actually two this month. And May the 30th, looking it up in the calendar, I see this is King's birthday weekend. So, which seems to have come earlier than the Queen's birthday used to be. Mm. It's quite interesting that they used to be sometime in June, and now here we are. It's a weekend beginning on May the 30th, so that's when our next AA meeting on air will be. Now, if I could ask, please, if Clifton could read the promises.
Yep.
Which is how many AA meetings end, with the promises.
That's it. The AA promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realise that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises?
We think not.
They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialise if we work for them. Thank you.
Thanks, Clifton.
Thanks, Clifton.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. Thanks, Chrissy, and thanks, Tim, and thanks, Clifton, for coming into this meeting of Wellington Alcoholics Anonymous on air on Wellington Access Radio. And we'll close this meeting, as we started, with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
And keep coming back.
It works if you work at it. It
works if you work at it.
Papai. Ka kite anō.
Ka kite anō.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.